All right, welcome everyone to another episode of the Jesuit Experience Podcast. I'm Ben Epic, and I'm here with Griffin Tabor, and today we're interviewing Mr. Harrington out of the Theology Department. Before we start, is there anything you want to say or introduce about yourself?
You know what? I don't know. Like, some of the things I can say, I think
you have questions.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah.
This is really, well, you know, Ben, we talked about this in class. I've podcasted for 3 years with my cousin, and so being on this side of it is always interesting to me.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely new for us, too. It's our first time having a teacher interview. Okay, so we'll just jump into the questions. How long have you worked at Jesuit, and what has been your most enjoyable part about working here?
Wow, this is year 17?
Wow.
16, 17, I think.
Oh, wow.
So my oldest is 15, will be 16 in March, and I'm always one ahead, so yeah. Yeah, it feels like a long time. It's gone very quickly. What I've enjoyed the most, this is cliche, is going to be my students. You know, and it just is, because I think one of the things it does is helps me, I don't know how to word this, it helps me, I don't know, in a weird way, kind of stay young, because
yeah.
I have to continue to, like, think about how to make my content relatable for you guys, and that definitely, you know, changes over time.
I think my dad's always said being around my brother and I have absolutely, like, made him more young. Like, I feel like being teenagers, we cause a lot of chaos, and other times we can just be a bunch of fun. But this leads to my next question. I know you teach senior theology, but what other classes do you teach, Mr. Harrington?
I've always had juniors and seniors. There was 1 year where I had only seniors, and I enjoyed it, and I wouldn't mind doing only seniors again. But there's something about the junior age group that I really enjoy. Now, over the time here, so it's when I first started the junior course with Faith, Morality, and Justice. And so, like, all the church heresies that y'all talk about sophomore year was actually junior year. Christian anthropology, I think, was the first senior course I taught that we don't offer anymore, which I loved that course, and Christian relationships. But at one time when I first started, those were the only two. Since we've added the others, and I've taught peace and conflict once, I've economic justice, I've taught a ton, I've taught interreligious dialogue both in summer and in school,
wow.
Helped work on developing the history of the Catholic Church there, but actually the only time I've ever taught that was in the summer with seniors who failed. So usually it's if you get me for church history, there's a
problem. Yeah. Just like you mentioned a lot of classes, is there any particular one that is your favorite to teach that you still teach or like wish you they would bring back to teach?
I wish we bring back anthropology.
Anthropology.
But I'm kind of finding ways to do that anyways. Mm-hmm. The idea there was, here's what it means to be human through a Christian lens. But you can do that in any of the classes anyways. And then I think my ultimate favorite is the relationships course, because I don't know, like, it sounds kind of weird. So, like, my parents divorced when I was 4, and when I went to get married, one of the things, I was in grad school and very much kind of had a weirdly academic approach and you know, or maybe in some ways a very Aristotelian approach, where I'd go and ask, like, friends who I knew were divorced, and I was like, what happened? And then I'd go ask friends and friends' parents who were still together, and what do y'all do? What'd you do? What was the secret? And mainly just trying to, I'm going to say, get it right, although that's not, I would say that's not an accurate way to put it when you actually experience what it's like to be married. But just trying to make it hopefully as divorce-free or as successful
right.
as possible.
What are some of the things you like took from those conversations that you have implemented in your own life and marriage?
the biggest thing, if I had to just in a nutshell, is communication. And the and a lot of people say compromise. I don't like compromise when it comes to that. I think it's more about open communication. Because, and I stress this in the class, this idea of when, and I get it can be some kind of maybe semantics or, you know, but it's truly having this mindset of you want this relationship to be successful. And sometimes that means recognizing what your partner wants and says is probably what's best, and setting your thing aside. And the reason why I don't like compromise is I just don't like the idea of putting myself or putting that relationship in a position where I might be wanting to keep score. Like, oh, I compromise this time. Like, both should be focused in on what's the win for this relationship. And being able to openly communicate and truly say, like, what you think and what you feel, and feel comfortable of that, to be able to do that and to be able to listen and allow your partner to openly communicate, I think is the biggest key.
I think one thing I've seen, my parents also got a divorce when I was about 9 years old, which is hard to believe it's been that long now, but every year I've kind of reflected and been like, you know, relationships are tough, but at the end of the day, there's always a way you can unite and work together. But I think communication is, I think, the biggest pillar that stands. I've learned at such a young age to communicate, and I think that's helped me because I've seen my parents fight, and it makes me stronger at the end of the day. And it's interesting to hear that perspective, especially because like 8 years later, it still occurs.
Oh, yeah. You know, and that's just talking about marriage. Like, you can
get
not going to go over the relationships, of course, but like you can get into friendships, you can get into any kind of relationship, right? If there's not communication or willingness to communicate, and you know, I've been, I've had, well, you came in a little late to the party on that, but that's always something I try to emphasize with students. So like, just be honest. Like, if you didn't do your work, don't tell me you did half of it. Don't tell me it's like, because I can't, without you being honest and just openly saying, yeah, I don't got it, or I've only done this, I'm not in a position to best help you, right? Mm-hmm. You know, which comes with it on my part. It's interesting. Most of us only lie, or the reason, not the only reason, but the big reason why people lie is because we've been punished for telling the truth. Right. And so trying to keep that in mind, no matter the relationship, like, oh, if I want this person to be honest with me, I have to be willing to listen and hear them out and do so in such a way that they're not going to feel hurt or punished for being honest.
That's a very good point. Yeah, we're going to pivot off of the relationships and classes discussion. I know you've talked in class about how you have a background in media and you mentioned your podcast. How did you get into teaching, if that's like something that's so passionate to you, and is there like a balance that you've achieved in your life?
Man, okay, so I was at UNT and I started taking an intro to philosophy class and learning about Aristotle. There was a conversation my dad and I had. I was a little bit younger than y'all. I was between freshman and sophomore year. Then he was trying to explain to me something about marriage and parts of the human being and all of this. And I'm 15. I promise you, it went in, you know, in one ear and out the other. But later in my early 20s, when I was at UNT and I took that class, that Aristotle lecture just, it clicked. And that kind of sent me down that path of wanting to, well, realizing that the church actually made sense, like logically, is like, oh, they're not just throwing stuff against the wall. And so I wanted to learn more about that and started on my own studying more about philosophy and theology. And I remember being at a Tia's restaurant in Denton that's closed now and just angry. And sitting there with my dad, and what I was angry was that it's like, why wasn't I taught this before? now after teaching so long, I realize there's some of it I probably wasn't taught, and there's some of it that I was no different than a typical student, and I was probably taught it and just didn't pay attention. That's just how it goes. And so my original goal is I wanted to go to get a master's in theology, which I did, but then go to film school at UT and really like do research and study about the cross between religion and film. But my wife and I met, and I hate to say this for the record, I needed a job. And one of my favorite professors, Dr. Norris at University of Dallas, was working here, and he asked what I was doing. After there, I said, I'm applying and looking at schools. He's like, Jesuit's hiring, you know, so I sent. And that's oversimplifying it a little bit, because like my wife was looking at some PhD programs and stuff. Mm-hmm. So if she got in, I think Virginia was one she applied to and some others, and if she got in, then it would have been off that way, you know, and it had been very different. So it was a good fortune that I ended up here.
Where does this passion for film come from? Where do you think that's originated from?
You know what? When I was in middle school, we would get a VHS camera and record. Huh. Just us singing along to songs, like makeshift music videos, reenacting Bloodsport as Ninja Turtles, like whatever it was, we would just record it because we had that. I loved, you know, the Star Wars trilogy growing up. I just, the film club, you know, I'd do that. And we're watching, I think right now we're watching Big, which is another one that I just watched over and over. And so I went to the Art Institute at first for computer animation, because my goal was to do visual effects. Like I was really obsessed with how do I make this impossible possible and look real. And so that's what I really wanted to do. And then later, like I said, as I matured and thought and stuff, that kind of changed. I did work at a TV station for a while, and so I didn't get to work necessarily in the industry per se in terms of film, but I definitely got to do the production side of media on a local TV level.
What did you do for the station?
Everything. Like I got hired to work the morning news. And then produce the local commercials.
Okay.
And then I would do like camera for the 5 o'clock news, and then I was done.
Wow.
Like, God, let's see. This was, I was 18. I was just barely 20 doing that. And then I ended up being the production coordinator. It's interesting talking about justice issues now. A big reason why I was production coordinator over production manager, because we didn't have one at the time, was production coordinator played less, but I did basically the production manager's job. There was a one time where I was doing 80 hours of a week, roughly, Monday, 7 days a week. And mainly, I was younger, I was able to do that. But what would happen was I got that position, we were shorthanded, and I was making the schedule. And the only way that the production assistants could get a day off, because we only got one day a week off, is if I worked all 7 days. Otherwise, somebody else had to do that. And so what I ended up doing at that point was I would work, direct the morning news, do my commercial production throughout the day, camera, direct 5 and 6, take a break, do the 10 o'clock news, and I'd do that Monday through Friday, and then I'd come in for the weekend news. And what was really cool until they noticed was, well, I had that job. They hadn't switched me over to salary yet, so I was still clocking in. So I was getting like this ton of money and then one day they pulled me in. It was like, you're going to go home and take a nap. And I came back the next day, and I was fully on salary. And so the time and a half went away. But yeah, so like that's, I mean, I did a little bit of everything. Like yeah. I remember we did Texoma, one of the big uh-huh. resorts out there. We went to this big 2000 for New Year's when it turned 2000, the year Y2K, and went live from there. Live commercials, produced commercials, like it's God, you name it. Like, I did it on the television production level. 9/11 was interesting because I remember 9/11. I was supposed to. I got in trouble, but they didn't. I didn't get in trouble. Like, I didn't get fired, I get written up or anything. But like, I remember I was supposed to go to a restaurant to shoot a commercial, and 9/11 attack happened that morning, and I went out with a reporter as his cameraman, you know, because it was like, it's 9/11, like, yeah. Like, and we don't call it that at the time, but like, we just were attacked, you know. So I just kind of made in my head this executive decision when I went out with the news there, and I remember, now, did I handle it right? Probably not, like, because I just didn't. I just ghosted him. I just no-showed. So that probably wasn't the right thing to do. But I think because of the news event, I don't think it bothered the news station as bad as it would have otherwise. So, yeah.
So I just found this out, but I've heard from Ben that you're very talented at art and drawing. And apparently in your classroom, there's a wall of Post-it note creations in your classroom. So what are your influences that got yourself into drawing?
So when I was at the Art Institute of Dallas, I was there for, like I said, the computer animation. Their program at the time was more geared towards video games, and so I switched to video production because I knew that I could take the visual effects electives, right, and still get what I wanted, if that makes sense. But one of the things they stressed was, even though it's digital, and this is what, 97, 98, early 99, that, and I still think it's probably true today. It was like, just because you have the digital art capable of this, you have to be able to have print. They want to see your portfolio. They want to be able to see that you can do this without any kind of digital assistance. And so learning how to draw formally there. And then I forgot what happened. One of my kids, my three kids, two of them are into art. One is a little bit more on the abstract. The younger one is much more into painting and abstraction. My older one is much more into graphic design, really developing with being able to blend colors. Like, she'll just take a regular Crayola box, and it was just like, what she's able to do with it is crazy. But as they started to develop, I started to draw more. And then one of my favorite comic book artist, he's from kind of the DFW-ish area, Todd Knock, would do the post-it notes. And so I just was like, oh, cool, I'm going to do that. And I would really do his very much. If you look at mine closely and look at his closely, you'd be like, oh, that pinky, that thumb, that nose is very much in line with Todd Knock. And so I just kind of started that back up again, you know. Yeah, just as, I've noticed I've always had to have something creative, basically. Even where I don't draw as much as I used to, then there was the podcasting, and then there's always something creative that I'm have some outlet there.
Speaking of the podcast, can you tell us about what that's about, how you got into it, and like how much you enjoy it, so the whole process of that sort of thing?
Okay, first off, we don't podcast anymore, me and my cousin. We did 3 years. I do. It's weird. My cousin and I still talk about this, where I miss it, but I don't miss it. Because of the time commitment, but at the same time, it's like, oh my gosh, we have so much time back that we used to not have to do other things. So it was over the Marvel Cinematic Universe. It was called MCU Need to Know, and so I'm sure it's still out there. Like, we're gonna get a whole bunch of downloads all of a sudden. Just like, oh, it's so funny. It was Dr. Parker's son, Sam Parker. When he was here, he was a junior, and it was a work day. And next thing you know, I hear from the back of the classroom my voice, like, coming. And he found it and played it. And I'm just like, what are you doing? Turn it off. So, yeah, like, my cousin, who streamed for, like, 4 years on Twitch, was super into the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And I was into the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And he's like, we'd always talk. And one day he was like, we should have a podcast together. Would you be willing to? I was like, yeah, great. And he quit streaming, and we transitioned into the podcast, and his Discord transitioned into the Discord for our podcast, and we did that for 3 years, and it was weird, because at some point it was like having another job. The amount of hours we put into it, everything from planning to recording to editing, because we take turns editing, finding guests, asking how to, trying to promote the podcast and stuff like that. So yeah, it was a fun ride. I miss it, but.
How often did you like record, and was it a pretty consistent upload schedule or?
Oh, yeah, we'd record every week and drop every Monday.
Jeez.
We would try to record in bulk when we could, but where we'd run into is like when a Disney Plus show came out.
There's
quick week turnarounds, and so between shows we would try to record like multiple episodes in a week. In fact, before we even started, the first thing we did was the first season of Daredevil Netflix, and I convinced them to do that because I was convinced that Daredevil, Charlie Cox, was going to come back, and they were going to bring him back. And so I was like, we got to do this. Sure enough, he showed up in Spider-Man, Far From, or No Way Home, so that was great. And we probably had the first 4 or 5 episodes done and edited, you know, even though we dropped on a weekly before we actually started dropping episodes.
Yeah.
But once that caught up and we were doing there, it was just every week nonstop.
Yeah, I mean, me and Griffin, we only did like a couple of semesters, but even that's like kind of a slug.
We started this, what would you say, like
end of June, March,
and took the summer off, and we decided to kick back down the door, and it's been a lot of fun. I think one thing I've definitely learned about this is I proposed this idea to Ben. We had Ms. Rodriguez last year for Sacraments of Morality, and I just threw that idea past him. I'm like, would you be interested in doing this? And I knew, you know, he's a creative guy, and I had this like long-term idea that maybe this could really pay off, and you know, we'll see how long it goes, and it definitely has.
So, okay, so let me ask you this. What do y'all edit on?
So I know how to edit on like a bunch of different stuff, but I just use Descript because for some of the, just for this podcast, because if we need a script, it's just so much faster for me to put it through that, and I can check the audio. Mm-hmm. But like, I do know how to use like Final Cut and like Adobe.
Adobe what?
I took sophomore year. I can't remember which one it was. It was like DaVinci Resolve.
DaVinci Resolve. Yeah. Okay.
And then I don't remember which.
Adobe Audio, the DAW, Digital Audio Workstation, for Adobe is going to be Audition.
Yeah, I think I did the one that was, I know how to use the video editor.
Premiere.
Yeah. Premiere Pro. My brother has a subscription, so I use
it. It makes a huge difference.
Yeah.
Cousin Trey started editing on Premiere, and when I finally talked him over to switching over to Audition, he was like, oh. Like, it makes a huge difference. Now, I ended up using, I started out with, I don't remember now, it's free. I used it for a couple of things. It's a free software. I can't remember what it is. In fact, I know some guys who, like, that's their day job. They edit podcasts on this. But I ended up switching over to a thing called Reaper, which is, there's a big learning curve at the beginning because it's really geared towards music production.
Mm-hmm.
But once you get that down, it's, yeah.
I think I'll definitely, over Thanksgiving break, I'm going to try to like master all the ins and outs. I'm more of like a video editing guy because I did that. I've taken some film classes, and like my brother was a film major. Like during COVID, he taught me how to do all this stuff. But yeah, the audio stuff, I like.
Audio's hard.
Yeah, I don't really know much about how to do it.
Audio is hard.
Yeah.
I think one thing, going back to the whole podcast thing, I wish we were more consistent. I mean, obviously, you know, balancing school, extracurriculars, and everything. It's just, if we could, in an ideal world, I would love to have a podcast at every like Thursday. I feel like I feel like Wednesday, you know, it's no homework's due, and then you pick right back up. I feel like that'd be an interesting time to start and, you know, pick it up. I mean, we still have a lot of time. I mean, it's November, and I think second semester kind of slows down for workload. I mean, you know, by then hopefully everybody's applied to college, and I think, you know,
you're definitely gonna start uploading. I mean, even this past week we filmed 3 episodes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, okay.
Yeah. We have 2 more. We're also I want to try
branching out the style of content.
Yeah,
branching out the style of content.
Yeah, like, okay. Hosted a debate last week.
Okay.
Between two debaters.
It was really, it was like almost an hour long of them just going back and forth, back and forth, back and forth.
Yeah, so for Trey and I, a typical recording would be about 3 to 3.5 hours.
Yeah. Holy cow.
And then it would take a good, basically almost the entire weekend.
Oh my gosh.
For us, we would record, and then we live 6 hours away, right? So we would record locally on our computer, and then we'd have to edit it together. And that was just if it was the two of us, and if we had guests, which we've had teachers here, guests actually, a couple of different times. But yeah, so it's, so now you're adding a third or a fourth person, and you're trying to edit that together and keep the levels all the same. And it's, and when you get to doing those kinds of things, that's, it can take some time.
Yeah.
Once you get your process down, it goes pretty quick.
Yeah, I remember we've only done one virtual episode. We did, I think it was the freshman welcome one. Mm-hmm. We did that on Zoom. And I remember we did the, like, my brother taught me how to do, like, you clap or whatever when you start, and we both start recording, so you can, like, sync it up together. That was so helpful, because there was no way I was going to, like...
That was a fun episode.
Yeah. But yeah, that was a good episode.
I don't like the clapping.
You don't like the clapping?
I don't clap. So to me, what Trey and I would do would be better is we'd count. One, two, three, go.
Yeah.
And so what would end up happening is we'd alternate. One of us say one, the other said two, three, and go. And so that way, with the audio... I didn't have to sync anything. I had to sync the numbers, rather than have to worry about syncing sound to a clip.
That's true. Yeah.
If a typical episode for your podcast is about 3 to 3.5 hours, how long would you suggest it take to edit? If one of you, I know you guys switched off. Like, how long do you think it would?
I would probably spend, if I went super detailed, I would spend probably 5-8 hours total editing.
Jeez. You know. Did you cut your episodes, or did you just call one take and just change the audio?
Oh yeah, yeah. Like we gladly, if you need to, you know, we tell people if you need to pause, say pause. Well, right there, I just said so you had the fillers and so going through and deciding
which ones to keep.
Right, because there's an element of it's a conversation, right. Ours, and so. There are times when the should stay because it sounds natural as part of the conversation. There's times where it's just like you're saying it over and you got to cut it out. But again, like I said, audio is hard. So like typical process for me, we put it into a program. Let's see, I got it on my laptop. My laptop's up. I put it in this program called Ozone. I can't find it. I got all kinds of stuff on here now. Our Isotope RX8, and what that would do is I'd run it through and it would check for clicks, pops, it would check for any kind of distortion if the audio got too hot, and then it would do a fix. If the audio was clean, I'd still run a small D-clicker on it. You'd pull that out, pop it into Reaper. First thing you're going to do on each individual track, you're going to run a... basically, it's a booster, right? Because you're going to want to record slightly lower than what you need and then boost up. And then you're going to want to do your equalizer then so you can have both of them sound the same level. So basically, all of that to say, if you guys know when you're rushing the radio and you have a podcast on and all of a sudden one sounds high, one sounds low, and you're riding your audio, your volume. Basically, you get a vocal rider, that's what the plugin's called, and you... get your audio set up, each individual on a vocal rider. And then you do that. You do your editing. I like to kind of start with the intro and then the outro. And so that way I can get both end and beginning, finish, and I kind of work my way in. And then once you do that, you gotta check what's called your LUFS. Basically, it's loudness. And depending on where you're going, we'd always set it for... YouTube and Spotify. They have a particular loudness setting versus Apple. And we always thought that one would cover both. And so then when you ran it through, you wanted to make sure the loudness was correct. You know, so that way, so for example, like it's hard for me to listen to podcasts now. So like I'll be in the car, and if I know that if I have to turn up the my volume to a certain number, let's say, and if I get a phone call, the phone call is going to blow out my ears.
Yeah.
And so it's like you get that and you learn to tweak that. And then the interesting and difficult part, because we were taking turns, was getting it to where we could both do it and it would sound the same regardless of who was editing. And so getting it to that point, and then we had a couple people offer to like, hey, you don't mind trying editing, but it was like, we get very protective of that. Yeah. It's like, you know, are you going to do our process and get it right? So, so that took some time.
All right. Speaking of taking some time, this is one of our longer episodes. We usually like to end with kind of like a funny question. So I'm pretty sure you mentioned in class that you had Jordan Lawler as a student.
Mm-hmm.
Was that like weird for you to realize that like a professional baseball player was sitting in your last period class, or was that this kind of
normal? Yes, only because of the way it happened.
Yeah.
Right. So for example, my first year here, I had a student by the name of C.J. Haley, who was Charles Haley's son. I had Drew Pearson's son, and I didn't know it until actually graduation. Like, it was just my student, whatever. Mm-hmm. And then I was listening to The Ticket, and Drew Pearson's on talking about going to the Jesuit graduation, and that's when I put it together, because I never saw him for like a parent teacher conference. Daryl Johnston had his kid in class, and what was interesting about that one was I have a picture of me and him together when I was like, when they won the Super Bowl back in '92, and he came to where I was from to do autographs.
Oh, that's crazy.
And so to have him have a son in class was one thing, but then to see him walking down the hall was like, okay. And then EJ Smith, at EJ Smith. Lawler, what was fascinating about Lawler is, I was joking with him about playing hockey, and I had no idea that he played baseball. I had no idea that he was that good at baseball. And I was just joking with him about he played goalie, right? Mm-hmm. And that's what he was. He was on the hockey team, played goalie. And as the semester was winding down and the draft was building up, checked my email on this thing from Dallas Morning News, and it said, you know, Lawler, potential top pick. And that's when it clicked. And I was just like, you got to be kidding me. I had no idea. Part of it is I try to treat my students as students, right?
Yeah,
they're your students. But at the same time, like, I had no idea. So I was definitely torn on who would win, who I was really rooting for in the World Series.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, some guys, what was it, Dan Marino went to the Super Bowl his rookie year and never went back.
Right.
You know, and so it's one of those things.
Mm. Speaking of the World Series, I know you're a big Astros fan. I know we talked about it in class, but how are you feeling about the Rangers winning the World Series?
I'm happy. I don't dislike the Rangers. Let's be clear about that. And I have cheered for the Rangers for many years. But also many years, it was easy because Astros were in the National League. And so it was always, and to be honest, interleague play wasn't around when I was growing up. And so once that was introduced, and I was like, okay, Astros, I'm going to cheer for the Astros because they're playing each other. That's still, what, early 2000s? It's when that 2005, I think, when the Astros went to the World Series and got swept by the White Sox, which is also weird because that was my favorite American League team growing up, because their shortstop, Ozzie Guillen, and at the 2005 World Series, their manager played for the Beaumont Golden Gators at the Lamar University Field. And before my parents divorced, I was like 3, 4, just right before, we were walking distance to the stadium. Oh, and Guillen was my favorite player, and I'd go watch. And so in 2005, when the two of them played against each other, it was like,
pretty
hard. And especially because he was a manager and I'd kind of followed his career. My fandom is weird because, like, I've had this understanding of, like, yes, this is my team and I want them to win and stuff. And, yes, there's teams that I don't like or whatever. But from a fan's perspective, it's so cool when the team you're invested in wins. And it's such an awesome feeling that, like, Mr. Donahue is thrilled for him. Mr. McGee is thrilled for him. In fact, I saw Mr. Donahue the other day, and I'm like, it's been a week since the parade, and guess what? There's still champs. And, like, he got, in a Mr. Donahue kind of way, you know, because it's just that awesome of a feeling. So, you know, Coach Gavin, who I'm really good friends with, and I can name all kinds of students as well. It's just like, it was my regret would be that the Rangers didn't win in Arlington, because that would have been really cool winning it at home. I'm thrilled for them. They got their win. Hopefully the Astros go back next year.
All right, sounds good. I think that's the end of our episode today.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for being here. I know 30 minutes on a Monday could be rough, but I really appreciate it.
No problem at all. I really appreciate you asking.
Yeah. So other episodes, like I said earlier, we have a debate coming out soon between Peter Lowe and
Luke Westlake. So it's about they both Peter debated for the state.
Peter, was an advocate of the state, and Luke was an advocate
libertarianism, right?
For libertarianism. And then we also have an interview with Anton DiMafelix and Dawson Zavala about this STARS program they were in this summer, and we probably have some more after the break.
That one, we also have another podcast where we're spotlighting the anime club with one of my closest friends, so it should be,
A lot of content.
Stay tuned. We're really glad Mr. Harrington got to hop on and get to know him a little bit more. So thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, guys.
And we'll see you next time.